Hey everybody, welcome to Finding Japan, episode 50. Well, 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 happy holidays, happy new year to you all. Today is Sunday, January 6th, and I've just arrived back home. I'm not even unpacked yet, and I have the recorder out. How are you all doing? I hope you had excellent holidays. I hope everything went well with your families, your loved ones, and your friends. Ah, wow, so much to talk about. I think I'm just going to get right into it. I just returned to Tokyo today, and in fact, I just arrived a few moments ago, and if the clock here is right, it says it's exactly 6 o'clock p.m. So what that means is essentially I have been up for the last 23 hours. I left Boston Logan at 7 a.m., but I had to get up at about 5:30 a.m. in order to do so. Me and my fiance stayed at a hotel right next to Logan for the second time, which is actually really good because you can kind of sleep in, and they have a little pedestrian bridge. You can go right into the airport. But so that would be, seeing that it's about 5, what is it? No, it's 4 a.m. right now. So yeah, about 22 and a half hours I've been up directly. So if this starts to not make much sense, I apologize. But I wanted to kick off the year right and do something as soon as I got right back into Tokyo. I thought it would be a little fitting. I guess the first thing, well, you know, I wanted to do a few things. I wanted to talk a little bit about my impressions on going back to the States after having been in Japan for the past 9 months and not leaving the country. I also wanted to talk about my impressions on coming back into Japan, because I had just as many ahas as I did leaving as I did coming back. So, and I got a few topics here that I just wanted to jump in. So without any further ado, let's go. You guys may hear the levels move around and all that great stuff. I'm gonna compress this later so it sounds a lot better, but I'm in the process of unpacking, and I'm gonna do this at the same time while I'm unpacking here. My approach to unpacking is to just get everything out of the suitcases, put the suitcases away, and then put the things away. Just kind of works out a little better that way. I've got some new toys after coming back from Christmas here. I have a copy of OS 10.5 Leopard, which I'm looking forward to putting in. And actually, one of the main reasons why I need to put this in is because apparently boot camp won't work. It won't affect your existing partition, but the beta software actually expires the end of 2007. So if you're a boot camp user and you're still using that, heads up on that. Man, I'm feeling a little dizzy. I feel like a night out. Oh, you're in my shower. I feel like a night out on the Tachinomi when I do one of those all-nighters, except I don't have the happy feelings from drinking all night, which is probably a good thing because tomorrow I do have to head into work. But yeah, I have Leopard now, and I also have Logic Studio 8, which I've been meaning to get. And my family purchased that for me, which was awesome. And what else do I have? Oh, and I also have the 16-gigabyte iPod Touch, which hasn't had any music on it since I've received it over the holidays. So I'm looking forward to syncing that up to the laptop a little later. Right now, iTunes is kind of just updating, catching all the new podcasts and everything. Being gone for 2 weeks, I'm completely behind the ball. I've gone through my email briefly, but I haven't even checked out what else is going on with everybody else. So I will be doing that throughout the week. So if you sent me an email and I haven't responded yet, or if you posted a comment, look for a response sometime later this week. Okay. So, kind of have most of everything unpacked here. I was able to bring some beef jerky in to the country here, which I think is actually not allowed, but I know it's not going to do any harm since it's, you know, it's dead meat and it's cured. I also have the Orange Box, which is a great set of video games. It has Half-Life 2, Team Fortress 2, this game called Portal, and all the original Half-Lifes as well. So, looking forward to that. And let's see what else. I got a few great books. I got an awesome book called This Is Your Brain on Music, The Science of a Human Obsession. And it talks about music and the way the brain processes music, which I'm really into science and I love music. It's been the perfect book. I think I blew through about half of it already, most of it on the plane. So, speaking of planes, I want to talk about Continental, because if you fly out to Japan, you need to know something about Continental. When I came out to Japan, Continental had that in-movie or in-flight entertainment thing going on, and they had the six-hour loop. I think it's a six-hour loop. Maybe it's a two-and-a-half-hour loop, and they have, I think, eight different channels. Seven, if you don't count the one that shows you where you are on the map. But yeah, so you have, you know, they had that sort of system. And coming over and leaving from Japan, my fiance had said that she found that system very annoying because the movies weren't very good, and she was kind of upset with the quality of the movies and everything, which, I can't blame her. I've certainly been in that situation as well. So what I did is I stocked up on movies. I have a personal media player. It's the Arcos PMA-400. It's like a 30 gig hard drive, and you can just stick movies on it. So I put a bunch of movies on it. But my flight from Tokyo to New Jersey had the most amazing in-flight entertainment system. I think they had 380 movies on demand, including all the Harry Potters, all the Lord of the Rings, everything you could ever want. And there were maybe about, oh God, there had to be about 30 movies that I had been meaning to see. One of which was the Simpsons movie, which I was able to catch on the plane. That was just awesome to be able to see that on the plane. But I was totally impressed. So impressed, I said, you know what, I don't even really need my PMA anymore. So I packed up my PMA and I put it in my check-in luggage. And wouldn't you know, I caught one of the flights that doesn't have the upgraded in-flight entertainment system here on the way back, so I was without movies. But I think that was probably a good thing because it did let me read that book a little more and kind of get a little bit of sleep in before arriving here in Tokyo. What else? I actually took some notes here. I did the ritual of dragging my luggage through the streets of Tokyo, which is a pain in the ass. I think some people would rather take a cab, but I sort of have this ritual down that I kind of enjoy. When I first came to Tokyo, I would always take the Narita Express to Tokyo. And for those of you who haven't been to Tokyo or Japan at all yet, let me explain. If you buy a ticket to Tokyo, you will fly into Narita Airport. Narita Airport is not the airport closest to Tokyo. That airport is, Haneda, I think? And, it always cracks me up because in the Kill Bill movie, where the character flies into Tokyo and she's like flying over and looking at the buildings, it's nothing like flying into Tokyo. You basically fly over the countryside, a bunch of rice paddies, and you land in this big open field. And then you have to take trains into Tokyo. The good news is there's many different ways to get into Tokyo, and they're all fairly quick and relatively cheap. But when I'd first come into Tokyo, I would always take the Narita Express, which goes right into Tokyo Station. Hold on a second, we're going to get a drink of water here. Okay. I've just been so thirsty since I got off the plane. In fact, we're going to go for a little walk over to the convenience store. Maybe you can catch the guy knocking on wood blocks next door. Hold on. I haven't done dishes yet, so I'm drinking water out of a bowl. I feel like a dog. That is refreshing, though. Okay. But I did a little more research in terms of just coming to Japan or coming to Tokyo from the airport, and there's a great line called the Keisei Skyliner, and that goes from Ueno Station directly to Narita back and forth. And that is actually perfect for me because I take the Ueda line to get to my apartment. So there is a stop in the Ueda line there in Ueno. Let me repeat that. Ueda line in Ueno. So it can get a little confusing there. But you have to walk through this pretty busy kind of downtown area. It has a bunch of lights. Kind of nice. So I always enjoy dragging my luggage through that area. It's kind of fun. It kind of reminds me that I'm back in Japan. And speaking of being back in Japan, for the second time ever, I was able to see Mount Fuji from the train on the way to Tokyo. And it was incredible because we arrived just as the sun was setting. And this, I caught a full sunset on my way from Narita to Ueno. And I caught that full sort of like orange glow sky. And in the background, you could see the huge Mount Fuji. And it was just perfectly cone-shaped. It was incredible. You don't get to see Mount Fuji from Tokyo that often. So when you do, it's kind of a treat. But very quickly, the realities of urban life in Japan stepped in. And all of a sudden, this beautiful view of Mount Fuji was quickly occluded by multiple concrete skyscrapers. So it was kind of a bummer in that respect, but it was nice to be able to see Mount Fuji on my first day back in Japan. And the weather here is incredible. I haven't looked it up on the weather thing here yet, but it feels like it's in the 50s. It must be. Let's see right now. I'm pulling it up now to see what it is. 12 degrees Celsius. I heard it was 14 degrees Celsius when we arrived. And now I have the windows open in the apartment, and it's just gorgeous out. It's a big difference from where I was. I spent most of my holidays in Connecticut and New Hampshire, and both of those places were extremely cold compared to what we're used to here in Tokyo. But again, in those areas, the summers don't get quite as hot as it does here in Tokyo, so I guess it's all a trade-off. But it was nice to come back to the weather, come back to the convenience of riding trains and not having to drive everywhere, and to come back to, I don't know, the nice side of Mount Fuji and my apartment and my bed, which is covered with clothes right now. But okay, let's talk a little bit about impressions on leaving and impressions on coming back. But before we do that, let me grab my coat and put it on here. I'm going to put the recorder down for a moment. We'll be right back. Okay. All right. So, my impressions of going back to the States, it's hard to believe that it had been about 9 months since I had left. According to this calendar thing, today is 296 days since I've been in Japan, but I think that would have made it, about 280 or so that I had been in Japan before I left, so that's quite a while, I think. But the one thing that I noticed immediately, and I had mentioned this before in another podcast, in fact, one of the early ones when I was here on vacation before I had actually lived in Japan, was the difference in service. Japanese service is really consistent and it's really friendly. Service in the US, not so much, and it appears to be getting worse. And perhaps it's the places that I've gone to, but I wasn't impressed. One of the things that really bothered me is I went into Supercuts to go get my haircut. Supercuts is a chain of cheap haircutting places, but I can't really say cheap compared to Japan now. I think it cost me about $14, $15 with, it was a $12 haircut plus $3 tip, so about $15 to get my haircut back in the States. And I walked in, and I stand up at the counter, and the woman behind just says, doesn't even look at me, just says, "Hey." And I was taken back. I'm like, "Hey, can I get a haircut?" You know, it was different. I'm not saying it's bad. It's just, you know, I wasn't quite used to it. And also just not making any eye contact with people when you go to, say, a fast food restaurant. They take your order and they don't even say thanks, or they don't even say, "May I help you?" They just kind of look at you and say, "What do you want?" And then they kind of hum and haw and huff and puff, like they don't really like working there. I mean, I can't blame them. Not many people really like working at fast food restaurants, but, you know, at least put some sort of pride into your job. I mean, a job's a job, but still, you know, I don't know. It's just different, and something that I was aware of, but it's just one of those things that becomes such a emphasis point when you don't experience it for a period of time, and then you go back to it, and you kind of see how it's different. The other thing is that the politeness in the United States is a little different. I think people in the United States are just as polite, but it's a little different. I'm more used to people following the rules. So if there's a line on the ground, you won't see people, or here in Japan, if there's a line on the ground that says "stand here," people will stand there and they'll form a nice line. If it says "make one line," people will make one line. This is everything from getting on an airplane to waiting for your luggage to waiting at a restaurant, anything in general, really. In the United States, and then, hold on, let me kind of form this a little better. The jisaboke is kicking in. That's Japanese for jet lag. Jisa, I think, is time difference. And boke means like foggy or out of focus. So jisaboke is sort of like fogginess, time difference. So it's kind of a neat way to say jet lag. Jisaboke. Anyway, let me see how to put this here. In Japan, if someone sort of creates a rudeness, they will apologize quickly and briefly and just kind of be very formal about it and just say, "Oh, sumimasen." And kind of maybe even if they're older, they may even give you that sort of like hatchet sign with their arm to kind of like cut in front of you if they're in a hurry or something. So, you know, people follow the rules, but when they break them, it's kind of a little informal or very formal. It's just kind of a little gruff, you know. But, you know, in the States, people don't really follow the rules as much. It's just sort of do what you want. And you know, that can be a little unsettling when you're kind of sitting there trying to, you know, behave socially, I guess, and then you see, you know, people sort of running around and doing whatever they want. But on the plus side, when people do make a mistake, they just seem a little more genuine about it. Just they're more friendly. So, "Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to do that," you know, and they'll talk to you and be friendly about it. So that's something that I missed. Being in Japan so often is that when you do interact with people, it seems like it's a little more, I won't say honest, but a little more open. I guess that's the right word, a little more open. So that's some of the things that I've noticed. Also, driving around in cars, getting into a car, getting back in, you know, getting out of a car, driving around, and just generally, like, running errands. I think it might have just been that I was so busy those 2 weeks back in the United States that I really didn't have much time to rest. and kind of decompress. But it was kind of a bit of a hassle to have to drive it everywhere. But at the same time, I think the plus side of that is you're free to go anywhere you want, anytime you want, and not really have to worry about taking a somewhat indirect route. And also, that trip to IKEA that myself and my fiance made on behalf of her sister was much easier to do with a car than it would have been on the train. So, again, you know, another sort of contrast there that I thought was worth pointing out. So, there you go. That's some of the things I noticed going back to the States that I sort of forgot about. I'm sure as the next week unfolds, I'll think of some other ones too, and I'll write those down and maybe put those together in a round two. But now I kind of want to move to things that I noticed when I got back to Japan that I thought were quite interesting. And this first thing is something I hadn't seen when I first came here, and I found it completely amazing. When you arrive in a foreign country, you know you have to go through immigration and then you go through customs. Well, before immigration and customs in Japan, they have this health check station. And it's meant to be sort of like a disease control type of thing. So if you're sick, if you have some sort of disease or like a bad cough, they kind of want you to sort of self-check yourself into this thing so they can check you out and make sure you don't have anything really, really bad that's going to infect the entire country and take Japan down. Because that would just be bad, right? So I remember kind of that they had that on the side. But one thing they had this time that I'd never seen before is they had a temperature scanner. And it's basically, it looked like a camera that was set up on the far end of the hallway, and there was a big sign next to it that said, "We are reading your temperature." So my guess is that it was a thermal imaging camera, and they're looking at people for people who have hot bodies, a hot body temperature, as they're walking off the ramp into the immigration area. And there are two, I wouldn't say officers, but sort of health inspectors just sitting there. One of them's looking at the camera, and the other one has these pamphlets. And then next to them, there was also a sign that says, if you're from one of these following countries, you must go into the health inspection area. And I think they were mostly African countries or South American countries, if I remember correctly. I should have written down the list, but I wasn't thinking. I just wanted to get home. But that, I thought, was kind of interesting. Another change is that now you need to have your photograph taken and you need to have your fingerprints taken when you come into Japan if you are a foreigner. I was a little weary about that because I know the United States does that too, but being a United States citizen, we don't get exposed to that. So you get a little nervous, you know, people taking your fingerprints, especially if you haven't done anything wrong yet. It's kind of, you know, a little bit of an invasion of privacy. But the way they do it is, you know, I thought I was going to walk out of there with ink on my fingers, but they have these electronic scanners. So there's these two pads, and it says place your index fingers here and push down. So you kind of do that and push down, and then it takes your picture in this little camera that you have to look into. Unfortunately, it doesn't show you what the picture looks like, so you don't know if you look good or bad. I probably look like a terrorist right now because I haven't shaved in about 4 days, and I grew about another day's worth on the flight. But it was very painless, very easy to go through the whole process, and the guy was really nice about it. The other thing that was different this time around, too, is I have a reentry permit. So I was able to go into a different line than the standard foreign passport line. And I was able to get through that really quick. I think there was two people in front of me in the entire line when I showed up, which really helped. So that was good. But my luggage took about a half hour to come out. So I guess it all evens out in the end. So that was some of the differences that I noticed coming back in to Japan and that process. I just sort of had a sense of wonderment again when I stepped on the train, though, and put my luggage down and kind of was in sort of a fog looking out the window and caught Mount Fuji, and then immediately had it interrupted by lots of bright lights and karaoke and pachinko parlors and lots of people and the smell of food in the air and escalators and elevators everywhere and concrete. It was just surreal. It's surreal. But it's feels good to be back, and I'm looking forward to Linda, the fiance. I'm just gonna start calling her Linda. I think you guys all know who she is now. I'm looking forward to Linda coming out here in February, and she'll be staying with us for quite a while, actually, until the end of our time here in Japan, and then we'll be heading back sometime in July. But we have to leave the country, actually, to reset her visa. But I'm going to do a whole other show on that because I'm gathering some information on that now and going through that process. But anyway, I wanted to welcome you all back to the podcast. I wanted to make sure I got an episode out quick. This will go out sometime tonight or early tomorrow morning. And well, that's all I can say right now. Thanks for listening. I'm looking forward to another great year of podcasting with you guys and doing some fun things with some of the other Japan podcasters that are here in Japan. Also, I think there's some more collaborative work coming up from the circle of friends here surrounding Tokyo Calling, including San Nakji, who's doing a series of interviews for his podcast, and I'm looking forward to participating in that. So, San, let's get that scheduled sometime soon, okay? Thanks for listening, everybody. Hope you had great holidays, and looking forward to bringing you some more episodes here coming up later this year. But for me now, I'm going to head on over to the convenience store, get a nice power drink, go grab something to eat, and then come back here and unpack. So I will catch you all in a few days or so. So stay warm, and I'll talk to y'all soon.